MechCast, Saturday, October 24th, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Hope you are having a great, wonderful week. I am actually about to get out of Dodge. We're going stir crazy, I have to admit. Things are getting a little bit crazy. We're going to stay safe. We're going to get out, just get away personally with the family for a couple days. So I'm sitting down to record this podcast a little bit earlier in the morning, I guess I should say, than I normally do. I'm starting to feel like Ken Ray a little bit. I think he records this time of day. But regardless, we got a lot of cool things to talk about in this episode, including new iPhones. I actually have one of these new iPhones here, a new iPhone 12 Pro. So we're going to get into some of the details about how iPhone sales have been going, some of the early reports of what's going on with iPhones. I will give you my initial thoughts and impressions on this new phone, share some of those with you, and we'll just dig into that. We're also going to talk about Apple Music TV. We're going to talk about Peanuts. We're going to talk about Apple Watches. We're going to talk about AirTags and Apple Glass and all kinds of fun things that may or may not be coming to your Apple store in the future, or at least your online Apple store. I guess some of the retail stores are open. I know some of you live in cities. You're lucky enough to have your retail store still open. And I know that with the iPhone 12 launch, there was in-store pickup as an option. I even had that as an option here in San Diego. I'd be curious to know if you participated in that, if you went to your local retail store and picked up your new iPhone. How did that go? What was that experience like? I have to have a feeling that it was very different than in years past. So if you want to shoot us an audio comment, just share your experience with us, I would appreciate that. MechCast@gmail.com. But then in the back half of the show, just a few things to talk about. We'll talk about an iOS bug that seems to have resurfaced and how you might be able to deal with that. We'll talk about 5G for a little bit. There's a lot of 5G questions, and actually we'll give you a little tip on how to tweak your 5G settings on your new iPhone. And that will round out this episode of the MechCast. So should be another good one. Before we dive into everything, though, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile. Smile makes awesome software. We love all of it, but I want to talk to you today about Text Expander. Text Expander is the thing that's going to let you take back your time. You can eliminate repetitive typing. You can get rid of those little typos and mistakes that you make. You can have it help you respond to emails, answer questions, especially if you're in a team at work. You can use it to help with your team communication at the office, something you might need now that a lot of us are working remote. You want to get all on the same page. You want to be communicating to your clients with the same messaging. And you can standardize all of that with Text Expander and get back your time, because you don't have to type all that stuff out all the time. And the latest version of Text Expander even has new improved reporting for your organization that will show you all the time that you're saving. And you can build those reports with customizable date ranges for your enterprise. You can do it for individuals so you can see how much time your team is saving. And when you see that, you can really see the power of Text Expander and how it basically pays for itself in the amount of time that you save. You can create powerful snippets just by having short abbreviations that will expand into full text. Text Expander does everything for you. It does all the typing, and that's how it ultimately saves you time. I have all kinds of snippets set up for the MechCast. As you might imagine, I get a lot of common questions, and as new stuff comes out, new features, I'll get new questions. And anytime I find myself typing out an answer to the same question twice, that goes right into a Text Expander snippet. I have a couple of keystrokes that I tap, and boom, that gets filled out. And I can even personalize it with fill-in text, with optional text. It has all kinds of powerful scripting capabilities. So it's an amazing tool, and it's available on the Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, iPads. You can have it everywhere you might type. And best of all, MacCast listeners get 20% off their first year. You just have to visit textexpander.com/podcast. You can learn more about Text Expander, get your 20% off your first year, and just have an awesome piece of software. And I can't thank Text Expander and Smile enough for their continued support of the podcast. So textexpander.com/podcast, and a big thank you to them for their support of the show. Let's get into iPhone 12 and iPhone 12 Pros. They are arriving. Of course, we're still waiting on those iPhone 12 Minis and iPhone 12 Pro Maxes. Those are going to be coming out in November. But right now, Ming-Chi Kuo, our favorite analyst, thinks that iPhone 12 Pro pre-orders actually beat his own expectations. He was thinking that the iPhone 12 was going to be the popular model. It still is. It's probably going to be the most popular model. But he thinks between the two iPhones that Apple likely got between 7 to 9 million pre-orders. And when you match that up against iPhone 11 pre-orders last year for all the models, not just two of the models, that actually gets pretty close to matching that number. So we still have the iPhone 12 mini and the iPhone 12 Pro Max coming out. So Apple is looking to really beat last year's numbers with the iPhone 11, at least according to Ming-Chi Kuo. Now, what caused him to kind of revise his prediction on the sort of percentages, I think we talked about this last time, percentages of iPhones he thought Apple would sell, he was really weighting heavily toward the iPhone 12. And just to refresh your memory, last time we talked about it, he said that the iPhone 12 would do between 40 to 45% of the first quarter sales. The iPhone 12 Pro would account for 15 to 20%. He has since revised that, evened out the two, and he now believes that each of them, the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro, will account for between 30 to 35% of Apple's sales. Now, he went back and also lowered his estimate on the iPhone 12 mini down to 10 to 15% from 20 to 25%. And he says that's mainly because they're seeing weaker demand for the smaller iPhone in China, mainly due to the fact that it doesn't have the dual SIM support. And they're actually seeing pretty good uptake on the iPhone 12 Pro in China. So iPhone 12 Pro kind of doing really well across the board. And that's ultimately good for Apple. So overall, iPhone sales looking to be pretty strong this year. We're already hearing some inklings that it may be a super cycle year. I don't find that too surprising, I guess I have to say. It does. It's an amazing phone. There's a lot of updates here. I think the cycle of people updating is just on track to have the iPhone 12 do very well this year. And just based on what I'm hearing from the community, it sounds like a lot of you are very excited about this year's iPhone, and this is the year that you're likely going to upgrade. So that's overall going to be very positive for Apple's numbers this year. Now, if you operate an iPhone, and an iPhone 12 specifically, or if you're getting a new iPhone 12, and one of the things that you like to use is the new dual SIM mode, which was first introduced with the iPhone 11. So you have the physical SIM and you have the eSIM. A bit of information came out this week that you probably want to be aware of, at least currently. If you're using the internal SIM and the eSIM at the same time in an iPhone 12 model, you're not going to be able to use 5G. You're going to be pushed back to LTE. This limitation was revealed in an internal Apple support document. Good news is that it looks like it's likely just a software bug, and it's something that Apple is expected to address and probably resolve before the end of this year. So it won't be around too long, but at least in the short term, you might have that limitation. So just something to be aware of. Another limitation that's popping up is the battery in the new iPhones, specifically when running 5G. So this whole 5G thing, yeah, we're going to talk a lot about it in this episode because it's turning out to be a little bit of a bummer, I guess. There's probably no way to sugarcoat it. You know, Apple really hyped this thing up during the keynote, and it was actually kind of a little unseemly, a little un-Apple-like, because they had Verizon in there. I think we talked about this in the last episode, and it just felt like a big old marketing hype for 5G. The number of times they mentioned 5G was crazy, and in the real world, out here outside of the reality distortion field, it's really feeling like 5G ain't all that ready for prime time. Like, we're a little bit of ways away, you know, and so it's not bad that Apple has 5G in the iPhone. I think it actually is really a good thing. It's where the technology is going, but all this hype around it that's being built up and is just not great, and it feels like there are some downsides. So Tom's Hardware this week ran some tests, some battery tests, comparing an iPhone 12 running in 4G LTE and it running in 5G, both an iPhone 12 and iPhone 12 Pro. And as you might imagine, the results were not great. They did web surfing tests. So they set them up, had them doing web surfing until the batteries ran down. And what they found was that an iPhone 12 running on 4G ran for about 10 hours and 23 minutes. But that same iPhone running on 5G got a battery time of 8 hours and 25 minutes. So about a 2-hour difference in the battery life. Now, the iPhone 12 Pro, similar results, 11 hours and 24 minutes on 4G, 9 hours and 6 minutes on 5G. And they also noted, because Apple kind of touted, hey, we know battery is going to be a thing. We're going to have the smart data mode that will kick in. And if you don't need the 5G, if you're doing less data intensive stuff, it'll sort of throttle it down, keep you on the 4G to help extend that battery life, then kick you up to 5G when you need it. But what they noted was it doesn't always turn on or come on in different scenarios when you would think. So it only happens in certain scenarios where it'll throttle you down to the LTE. And one example they gave was music streaming, but only when the screen was turned off. So, you know, there's like very specific scenarios, I guess, when this thing kicks in. Of course, this is something that Apple can probably tweak in the software. So hopefully it will improve over time, but just something to be aware of. And all of this, you know, is coming to light along with the fact that the new iPhone 12s do have smaller batteries than the previous models. And obviously, 5G is going to take a little bit of a toll. And so I've been looking at all these reports, and it's kind of feeling like a little bit doom and gloom, and you're getting a little bit bummed. I just got a new iPhone 12, so I don't want to hear this sort of thing. And I, you know, the more I think about it, though, I had to think, is this really an issue? I know we always want improved battery life. We want battery life to go up. We don't want it to go down from generation to generation. But I think back, or just think about my daily usage, and I really have not had a problem with my battery or getting through the day with my iPhone on a charge in a long, long time. And even if I'm able to get 9 hours of usage out of my phone, I'm not using it for 9 hours straight on a typical day, right? So it's asleep, it's in my pocket. And I just don't see this being ultimately a problem for most people. I guess very heavy users, this could have an impact, and maybe in certain situations. But, you know, I just grab a charger, I plug in, and we're going to talk about charging in a little bit too. That's the next thing. So maybe this is a good segue. But, you know, charging is a little bit of an issue as well. And Apple has really touted MagSafe. So MagSafe is going to be a good thing. But again, we're finding out after the event that there's a few little limitations, a few little caveats, a few little sub notes, I guess you should say, to be aware of. So one is, if you want fast charging with the new Apple MagSafe charger on your iPhone 12, you're going to need a new Power Brick. Now, Apple made this big deal about, you know, they're not including Power Bricks in the box because everybody has a Power Brick already and they're trying to save the environment. Well, it turns out that if you want to fully fast charge at the fastest speed with your new Apple MagSafe charger, you're going to need Apple's new 20-watt power adapter. And you do need the 20-watt one, not the 18-watt one that maybe came with your iPad or your iPhone last year. That one will still work, and as a matter of fact, the MagSafe charger will work with bricks all the way down to 12 watts, but you won't get the full fast charging unless you get the 20-watt brick. So that's just something to be aware of. Again, not really surprising, but might be a little bit of a bummer for anybody who is thinking about saving some money and just using their older brick. That MagSafe charger, not cheap. You know, it's $40 US, and then the 20-watt power adapter is another $20. So you're looking at like $60 to just get charging, $60 additional on top of your phone just to get the fast charging and the MagSafe. I'm going to be sticking just with my Qi chargers. Never had an issue with them. We'll talk about speeds and charging and stuff like that here in a second, too, because I do have a question for you about that, because something else that came up was that, and I think we talked about this last time, that the Apple MagSafe charger does work as a standard Qi charger. So if you got one of those, you could charge other Qi-compatible devices. You won't be able to do it at the fast charging speed at the 15 watts. You are limited to 7.5 watts. But it's also now looking like, and there are some indications, at least from a set of tests that a YouTuber did, that the charging rates for non-MagSafe devices, non-iPhone 12 models, may be a lot slower than expected. As a matter of fact, this YouTuber claimed that he was only getting charging rates of between 1 to 3 watts when using the MagSafe charger with, say, an iPhone 11. Not the 7.5 watts you would expect. Now, he claims that it was perfectly aligned and centered. We know that if you're a little bit off center, that can slow things down. He was also not doing real-life battery tests where he was checking the amount of time. He was actually using a app, so maybe some numbers could have been off there. But this seems to be backed up by some other reports from some other sources who are saying, yeah, we're not seeing the kinds of charging times with the MagSafe charger on non-iPhone 12 or non-MagSafe devices that we would expect. And in many cases, it's better just to use one of the existing Qi chargers that's already on the market. And the fact that those chargers are readily available and a lot cheaper is probably a sign that that's what you're going to want to stick with. So get a MagSafe charger and a 20-watt power adapter if you want to do the fast charging with your iPhone 12, your iPhone 12 models. But if you're relying on that MagSafe to charge older devices, it's probably not worth the investment. You're probably much better off sticking with a standard Qi charger that's already on the market. So just something to be aware of. Now, getting back to the speed of charging, because I really do have this question as well. A lot of people seem very concerned about how fast they can charge up their phone, whether it takes 30 minutes or an hour and a half, what have you. My charging patterns personally is I have a couple of Qi wireless chargers in different areas. I have one in my office, I have one in my car, and I have one on my nightstand next to my bed. And most of the time, I just run my phone throughout the day without even connecting it to a charger at all. It lasts me the whole day. I go to bed at night, I put it down, and it sits on that charger for 6 to 8 hours. So it never really occurs to me or has never really mattered to me how fast that charges. And so I am curious, are there a lot of people out there who really rely on being able to wirelessly charge very, very quickly? And frankly, if you want to charge quickly, plugging directly in with the cable is going to give you the absolute fastest charging speeds. So I get that, yeah, we want to have the technology that is the latest and greatest, and we want to be able to do the fastest, greatest stuff. But I've never seen this as a day-to-day problem for myself. But, you know, that's just me. I'd love to know what other people think. Is this stuff a big deal? Is this something that concerns a lot of people? Or do, you know, normal charging patterns for most people not get impacted by this? If you have a thought or an opinion on this, shoot me a comment, send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Now, one other little possible ding on the new MagSafe charger is that Apple did put out a support article mentioning that the MagSafe charger might leave circular imprints on Apple's leather case when you're using it. And I would imagine other cases as well, because it's locking that magnet right onto the device, making a very, very tight connection. I would think that other Qi wireless chargers that you just set down on top of a puck or something like that also potentially leave marks. I've never really noticed it on any of my cases with the ones that I use, but I have to imagine this could be a potential problem with other chargers. I don't know how big a deal this is. But, you know, your Apple nice leather case, you might not want all marked up with a charging circle, right? Or maybe it's just part of the patina, part of the wear and tear that you're going to get with MagSafe. Another thing in the support article I found interesting was Apple also warned you not to place credit cards, security badges, passports, or key fobs between the iPhone and the MagSafe charger because it could damage them. Why you would do that, I have no idea. Basically, between the MagSafe, sandwich it between the MagSafe charger and the phone. But I also do wonder if just having the iPhone with the MagSafe in it in your pocket and then having that next to a credit card or a car key fob, I'm wondering now if that might be an issue. I know with Apple's MagSafe wallet accessory, we've heard that they actually have shielding in that to protect the mag stripes on like your credit cards and the chips on your cards from getting affected by the magnets. What if you don't have that? What if I just slide my iPhone in my pocket with my credit cards? Is that going to be a problem? Or my car key fob, could that potentially damage it? They don't mention that here. They say you'd actually have to put it between the phone and the MagSafe charger, but I would think if that's an issue, the other might be an issue as well. So I'd be curious to try and follow up on that and see. If anybody happens to know, let us know as well. Another little odd one that happened this week, there were some reports of some people getting new iPhone cases without the holes for the speakers. Some images surfaced online, and they were getting Apple's silicone case without any speaker holes. It just had the hole for the lightning port connector. And as a matter of fact, some people called into Apple support and they told them, oh yeah, it's supposed to be that way. It's designed. It's not. If you get an Apple case that doesn't have speaker holes, send it back. You need to have the speaker holes in it or the sound's going to be very, very muffled coming from your iPhone. So just a weird quality control thing. I suppose. I don't know how many cases were impacted, but hopefully Apple is handling those returns for those people who got one of those weird Apple cases. Now, you know, to wrap this up, let's wrap it up on a little bit of good news because we kind of had some negatives about the iPhone launch. Overall, I'm very positive about the iPhone 12 in general, right? I think sales are going to do very well. It's a great device. It's a great looking device. Mine came today as I'm recording this podcast, or I guess technically yesterday at this point. But I love the new design. I love the squared off edges. I did go with the new Pacific Blue color, which I think is gorgeous. It is really, really nice. I liked the green one last year with my iPhone 11, but I think I like this blue color even more. I did get a chance to go out and do some 5G testing. We'll talk about that a little bit, my first 5G experience. I don't want to give it away too early in the show, but overall, It's a great iPhone. The size, actually, it isn't too bad. I put it up next to my iPhone 11. As you know, I'm not a big fan of the larger phones. I was concerned about going to the 6.1-inch size. It's about the same size without a case as my iPhone 11 was with my Apple leather case. It matches up almost exactly. So it's just a millimeter or two larger, and I think that's due to the reduced bezels. Because I did try the iPhone 11 in the store, which was a 6.1-inch model, and that felt significantly bigger than my 5.7-inch iPhone Pro. So 6.1-inch, I think it's going to be okay. I still don't like that it's getting bigger. I would love it if they did a mini-sized Pro. I think that would be awesome. That would be the phone for me. The main reason I did stick with the iPhone Pro is the cameras and the new LiDAR system. I wanted to be able to play around with that, so I'm excited to get a chance to play with that. But after the design and the new LiDAR cameras, what I realized today was the iPhone 12 is not that much different than my iPhone 12 Pro, rather, is not that much different than my iPhone 11 Pro. There really is not a lot of updates and enhancements. So I kind of feel like if you already have an iPhone 11 Pro, there's not much need to update or get an iPhone 12. You're not gaining a lot. You're basically gaining the new design and LiDAR and I guess 5G if that's something that you think you need. But we're going to talk a little bit more about 5G too. And I have a feeling that there's a lot of people who are going to conclude that, you know, they don't need 5G right now. I think eventually, you know, everybody's going to want 5G when it's really deployed widely and working well. But for right now, I don't really think most people are going to need it. But that's kind of my thoughts. Oh, so then the last thing on the iPhone that's kind of some good news that has come out since the iPhone was released is that the new ceramic shield technology, the new glass technology that Apple claims makes the glass four times stronger, that does look to be holding up. It does look like that's providing extra strength. There was a YouTuber who did some testing with a force meter and found that the new glass could handle about 100 newtons more pressure than the iPhone 11 screen before breaking. And that's a significant amount of extra durability. So that is going to provide some protection. He also did some scratch tests, and it's just a teeny tiny, I mean, minuscule amount more scratch resistant, which is good. I think some of us were hoping with the ceramic shield that it was going to be a lot more scratch resistant. It basically was able to handle, they use these hardness picks that use something called the Mohs scale. And most iPhones previous to the iPhone 12 would scratch with a number 6, number 7 pick. The iPhone 12 seems to be immune to, more mostly immune to the number 6 pick, and will just barely start scratching with the number 7 pick. So it's just like a smidge better in terms of the scratch resistance. So that's good news on that front. By no means is any of this stuff really damaging or bad for the iPhone 12. It just is a little bit different. So, you know, possibly a little less battery, 5G, and, you know, the MagSafe stuff. You're going to have to stick with MagSafe across the board if you want to have that full fast charging. But again, as I mentioned before, I don't know that it matters all that much. But again, love to hear your opinions on this. Shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. So do you want your Apple Music TV? Yep, Apple Music Television. Apple launched a new 24-hour live streaming music channel on Apple TV and Apple Music. It's currently available in the U.S. only, but they are going to show basically music videos. It's MTV Apple style in 2020. They're saying they're going to have exclusive new music video premieres, special curated music video blocks, live shows and events, as well as charts countdowns and guests. And I think they kicked the whole thing off with like a countdown series. They also did a special 24-hour period for the new Bruce Springsteen documentary that they launched on Apple TV. So they did Bruce Springsteen music and interviews for 24 hours. So they're going to do that sort of stuff. And it should be accessible now. You can use the Browse tab of Apple Music, look in the music video section, or you can find it in the Apple TV app. So what do you think about this? Are we ready for 24-hour music video channel? I mean, I loved it back in the day with MTV, but does the current generation love it? Is this a thing that the current generation wants or needs or will watch? Probably not really my thing. I'm not too interested in it. I like to listen to music. I love my HomePod, but I'm not too into the music videos these days. But maybe it's going to make a comeback. I don't know. And maybe this is the thing that that brings it back. I'd love to know what you think on this one. Looks like Apple is extending and strengthening their relationship with the Peanuts. Apple has a new deal with Peanuts Worldwide and Lee Mendelson Film Productions for content on Apple TV+. The agreement will bring new original content and the Peanuts classics to Apple's platform. They've announced a second season of Snoopy in Space and also a series of new specials for Mother's Day, Earth Day, New Year's Eve, and Back to School. Apple has also recently made available the It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown special exclusively on Apple TV+, but they are going to have a free viewing period available from October 30th to November 1st. They're going to do a similar thing with the other classic holiday Charlie Brown specials. They're going to have a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving available in November and also a Charlie Brown Christmas in December. So all those great Charlie Brown classic Peanut cartoons, those specials you look forward to every year, they are going to be exclusive on Apple TV+. Now, some people were very upset about that, but again, Apple is going to have a free viewing period available for each one of those. So it's very similar to having it on airing on a channel during the holiday season. It's just you're going to have to come to Apple TV Plus, which is a little bit of a coup for Apple, right? Because that means to watch it, folks are going to have to at least download or get access to the Apple TV Plus app, either on their TV or their set-top box, or just download it to their device. And maybe they'll stick around and check out some other shows or try out a free trial. And I think this is a great way to get people into the Apple TV Plus program. So I think this is ultimately really great for Apple. Doing a deal with the Peanuts, it's great family content. Absolutely love it, and great to see it coming to Apple TV Plus. Apple has also announced that they bought the worldwide distribution rights to a new documentary, The Velvet Underground, about the band by the same name and directed by Todd Haynes. That's going to be coming to the platform. They also announced a new film from Scarlett Johansson. She's going to star and produce in a movie called Bride. This is according to Deadline. It is going to be directed by Sebastian Lelio, and it is coming from A24 Studios, who Apple has, I believe, a first look deal with, and they've been doing a number of A24 Studio films. So this new one from Scarlett Johansson is going to be their latest. And then the last thing we're hearing about in Apple TV Plus news is that Apple might be looking to acquire the release rights for the latest James Bond film, No Time to Die. This is the 25th film in the franchise, and it's actually the last one that's going to star the current Bond, Daniel Craig. It was originally set to release in theaters back in April, but it's been delayed because of the coronavirus. They keep delaying it further and further. The current release date is April of 2021, so they've got it delayed a whole entire year. Word is that the studio is looking to maybe sell it off, and that Apple and Netflix are in a bidding war to actually get the film. This would be a great coup for Apple to get. If they can pull this one off, I think this would be pretty big. It would make a lot of news. Again, draw a lot of attention to Apple TV Plus. You may remember, at least I remember way back when, there were some rumors that Apple was maybe even trying to get the entire Bond catalog to have on Apple TV Plus, all of the back catalog and all of the films. If they could work that deal out, that would be even more massive. So it would be pretty cool to see Apple pull something like that off, even if they just get the film. I think that would be a pretty big deal. I think this issue is probably pretty limited in terms of its scope, but something came up this week that was a little bit concerning. It started in South Korea with the Apple Watch SE. This is on some Reddit posts. There are a number of people saying that their Apple Watch SEs were overheating. But Mac Rumors also confirmed they had at least one person in their community in the U.S. who had this same issue. Basically, owners are reporting that the watch either gets hot when it's on their wrist or while it's on the charger, and then a little bit later starts to develop a yellow kind of hot spot on the display up in the upper right-hand corner. Now, speculation is that it could be something wrong with the display connector in a couple of the models, or in a few of the models that have shipped near the Taptic engine. I guess that's where that connector is. And so far, the issue does seem to be impacting a very, very small number of users. I think there were 6 in the original Reddit report and the 1 confirmed in the US by Mac Rumors. I'm throwing this out there just not to concern anybody or worry anybody, but just to let you know it's something to watch out for if you have a new Apple Watch SE. And we'll have to keep an eye out, see if this gets more widespread. But oftentimes, you know, Apple is making millions and millions of these devices, and occasionally, you know, small issues can happen with a batch of Apple Watches. So let's hope that's what's going on in this case, in that it isn't anything more serious. Here we go again. Where have we heard this before? Additional reports that we are going to see Apple's AirTags soon. This is coming from a couple of our more recent leakers, Love to Dream, and our favorite YouTuber, John Prosser. They are back on the AirTag bandwagon, saying that the launch is, quote, imminent. It is going to happen any day now. There's also now some indication, at least according to Love to Dream, that the AirTags could come in 2 different sizes, a small and a big. I guess depending upon the item that you need to track, you'd have a different size. Maybe a larger battery in one of them for the larger one, so you can get a little more battery life out of it. Prosser says that Apple is in final performance testing, and then that is going to be complete on November 6th. Typically, after they complete that, it's a 30-day to release cycle. So he's suggesting that Apple could have them in the November event. If you remember, there's a lot of speculation that Apple is going to have a November Mac event to introduce their first Apple Silicon Mac. We're all hoping that's going to happen, and it's likely going to be an update to the MacBook Pro, a new 13-inch MacBook Pro, possibly an updated MacBook Air, or maybe even the return of the 12-inch MacBook. But some bit of Apple Silicon is expected to be released or announced in November, and they're predicting that maybe AirTags will finally launch along with that. The tags are expected to be round and white. There's a debate on which side will have the Apple logo, the front or the back. We've seen kind of designs for both. In one of the designs, I think there's a metal back with an Apple logo. Presumably, that would be where you would attach an adhesive or something to stick the tracker on to your item that you want to track. So you'd ultimately cover up the Apple logo anyway, so I don't know why they would put it on that side. But Prosser says that the tags are slightly larger than a bottle cap, so actually pretty small. I don't know if that would be end up being the small tag or the large tag, but supposedly that's about what the size is, and they are expected to use ultra-wideband technology that would make it really easy to get down to a few inches in terms of the tracking. It's all supposed to track through the Apple Find My app, have full integration, of course, like all Apple products do. So a lot of people are very excited about the AirTags. We've heard pricing likely going to be expensive, as a lot of Apple products are. So it'll be interesting to see how they compete in the whole tag tracker market. Of course, I think they're going to fall back on their tight integration with all of your other Apple stuff, right? And it really just working seamlessly and just being a great user experience, which is always the thing that Apple comes back to. And the reason, you know, they often deserve to get a little bit of that extra money, because they really do make the experience seamless. So I'm excited to see AirTags. I don't know that it's particularly a product that I need, but a lot of people seem to really like the trackers. And if Apple can pull off a version that is better than what is on the market today, I think they might do very well with them. So we'll just have to wait and see. What do you think? Are we going to see these in November? We've been hearing about them for forever, so hopefully Apple has them ready to go. I only waffle a little bit because Prosser came out, said they were coming out, and then he had recently said they were going to be delayed until March of 2021, and now he's back on the bandwagon saying, nope, they're imminent, they're going to be coming any day now. So his sources, I think he guesses at a lot of things and occasionally gets some things right, but it's still often fun to speculate a little bit. And then finally, in the news for this week, we have some updates or some new rumors surrounding Apple Glass, Apple's AR headset that they have been developing for a while. There is a report from a Japanese publication that was corroborated by a display industry analyst, Ross Young. They say that Apple is planning to use Sony OLED micro displays in their rumored AR glasses. The displays are said to be cutting-edge small video displays with a fast response rate, high contrast image technology, and precise color reproduction. They also offer integrated drivers along with power-saving features, so they seem particularly suited for the kind of application that Apple would have. So you're going to need something that is highly efficient in terms of the battery, something that can be very, very small and self-contained, and these displays seem to fit that bill. More importantly, too, they also deliver a high contrast, which is particularly important for AR technology or AR situations, because that means that they can overlay images and text right on top of the environment that you're looking into without having to add any additional kind of overlays or backgrounds, you know, so you don't have to like put an opacity layer behind the text to make it more readable, because the high contrast on the screen is going to make it possible to read that across your environment. So it sounds like this is something Apple is working with Sony on, and maybe we're getting closer and closer to having a set of Apple VR or AR glasses. Again, this is one of those products in my mind that I'm probably going to have to see to fully understand how this fits into my life. We know that Google tried a little bit of this with Google Glass, and, you know, it didn't go all that great for them. So maybe Apple has found the secret formula, or is it finding the secret formula that turns this into a true consumer product. I think style is going to have a lot to do with it. And we know Apple is pretty good at getting form factor correct. And if they can put together the right combination of hardware and software and sort of right applications, yeah, maybe this is a product that we will be clamoring for. As Apple fans, you know, pretty much they put an Apple logo on it. We might be clamoring for it anyway, but let's hope that this turns out to be something that, you know, really is life-changing and makes an impact on the world. That's usually what Apple's striving for, and so hopefully that's what they'll deliver when they're ready to deliver it. But what do you think about Apple Glass and AR and VR glasses? I know it's becoming a thing. I don't think it's really gone mainstream yet. Again, I don't know that I see it as a product that I need in my life right now, but Apple's convinced me otherwise in the past, so maybe they can do it again. But what do you think? Shoot me an email, send me a comment, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Linode. Look, whether you're working on a personal project or managing an enterprise infrastructure, you deserve simple, affordable, and accessible cloud computing solutions that allow you to take your projects to the next level. Simplify your cloud infrastructure with Linode's Linux virtual machines and develop, deploy, and scale your modern applications faster and easier. You know, I like Linode to help me with my development. It is a great place for me to be able to spin up servers and environments to build out and work on my projects, to build test projects, because it is super simple to do. Their cloud manager is amazing. It makes it super easy to set up and manage your Linodes. And for you, you can choose to use your Linode for whatever you want. It's totally up to you. You want to build a gaming server? You want to build your own VPN? You want to do a Git server, WordPress? It really could be anything. And best of all, you can get started on Linode today with a $100 free credit for listeners of the MacCast. You can find the details at linode.com/MacCast. That's linode.com/MacCast. And Linode has 11 global data centers. They provide 24/7, 365 human support with no tiers or handoffs, regardless of your plan size. In addition to their shared and dedicated compute instances, you can also use your $100 credit on S3 compatible storage, managed Kubernetes, and even more. Visit linode.com/MacCast and click on the Create Free Account button to get started. And a big thank you to Linode for their support of the MacCast. So you might remember when iOS 14 came out that one of the big new features in it that is something we've been waiting on for a very long time is the ability to change your default web browser and also to change your default email client so that no matter what app you're in or what you're doing, when you click on a link or you go to compose an email, it opens up an app other than Apple's default mail app or Safari. So you can now change that stuff. But right after iOS 14 came out, it was discovered there was a small bug in that feature where if you ever rebooted your iPhone, it would change back to the defaults. And Apple ultimately fixed that not long after release. That bug was discovered, and it was fixed quickly. Well, now it looks like there is a new bug in the latest version of iOS 14 that reverts your default browser and email settings. This time, when you update the app that you're using, that's not, you know, if you're not using Apple's built-in mail or built-in Safari, if you've switched the setting and you do it within the third-party app that you want to move to, it will switch back. And I actually did get hit by this because I use Spark as my email client, and I had changed it on my phone to be my default email client. But when I read about this new bug, I went and checked, and sure enough, it had switched back to mail.app. So I wanted to make you aware of this in case you had switched yours. You might want to double check and make sure that your default client still is the one that you want it to be set to for mail or for web browser. And if not, you're going to have to switch back. And then if you ever update that app, you'll probably have to check it again, at least until the next version of macOS comes out, because it looks like Apple may have already patched this issue in the iOS 14.2 beta, which we are expecting to be coming out sometime soon. So hopefully it'll be already patched. Maybe it'll even be patched by the time you hear this. But I just wanted to throw that one out there because the bug is back. All right, we talked a lot in this episode about 5G and the new iPhones. We're going to continue that conversation because we were talking about it last time, and specifically talking about the two different technologies, the sub-6 gigahertz and the millimeter wave technology. The millimeter wave technology is the really fast stuff, and listener Mike was looking into it, and he discovered something about it that might crop up depending upon who your carrier is. So here's what Mike had to say.
Hi, Adam. This is Mike from Hershey, Pennsylvania. I enjoy listening to your podcast. Keep up the great work. This is just a public service announcement for your listeners, particularly if they have Verizon, though it may apply to other carriers. I had read some articles that certain plans of Verizon will not offer the millimeter wave 5G. And as I looked into it, I have a legacy unlimited plan. And sure enough, my plan will come with the what they're calling the nationwide 5G, which is the low band, but not the millimeter wave. If I want the millimeter wave, I either have to upgrade to a different unlimited plan or pay an extra $10 to get that access. So funny what money can do to make things available. I know 5G is not going to be available, the millimeter wave, in a lot of cities. But for those of your listeners that will have access to it, I would just tell them, you know, check your plan and see what is available. Again, thanks for the great podcast and take care.
Hey, Mike, thank you for alerting us to that. Yeah, I don't remember that being in the keynote when they were talking about their nationwide coverage and 5G, you know, high speed millimeter wave stuff in the Apple keynote. That's a little bit odd, don't you think? Yeah. You know, 5G, let's talk about the millimeter wave stuff, right? Let's talk about it in reality, because if carriers are asking you to pay more for it, it's kind of crazy, because the reality is right now, as far as we know, at least in the United States, I don't know how it is in other countries. I think in other countries, they don't even have 5 millimeter wave available. I want to say that it's the only the US iPhones that have the 5 millimeter wave technology right now, because it's just not widely deployed globally. And even in the US, it is extremely limited in terms of where it's deployed. It's just a few cities for Verizon, and I don't even know about the other carriers. But also, I've heard, even when and where it is deployed, that the coverage is extremely limited and extremely spotty. Like, I've heard reports or read reports where they say you have to be literally on specific streets or in specific blocks. And if you're not in that area, you're not going to get the high speeds that millimeter wave 5G promises. I also do know that it only works outside. It can't really penetrate, especially concrete or buildings. And pretty much, I think it needs to be almost line of sight. Like, you have to have a clear line somehow to the tower, to wherever the antenna is, to really get the best speeds. So I don't see how that could be worth another $10 a month, even if you're in a city where you get millimeter wave. It's going to be really interesting to see how they sell this. I think they're trying to overhype it, to overmarket it. And luckily, I think most people are catching on and realizing that it's a lot of hooey at this point. It really, really is. So don't be fooled by it. It's kind of crazy. I would not pay extra for it. If it's part of your plan, great. If you get it as part of your plan, great. But yeah, I don't see anybody needing to pay, at least at this point, another $10 a month. I'm happy to be wrong. If you think I'm wrong and you have evidence and want to share that with us, please, please do. But everything that I'm reading, everything that I'm hearing at this point, is that's where 5G stands today. So still a little bit too early. I think Apple's jumped on this technology quicker than they have any other wireless technology. Likely in an attempt to sell more iPhones. I think they're really going to, we've already seen, market the heck out of it. And I think there are going to be some people that are going to fall for it. But, you know, the 5G is good. I will tell you this, you know, I have my new iPhone. I just got it today. I was able to do my first 5G test. I was out. I saw the 5G logo come up on my phone, and I quickly did some speed tests, and I was able to get 164 megabits down and 76 rather megabits up. So hey, that's not too shabby. I think my LTE connection tended to be around 50 to 60 megabits per second. So that's 100 megabits per second more. You know, I'm more than doubling my speed, my download speeds. So that's great. And that's the 6 gigahertz, you know, the sub 6 gigahertz stuff. So I think that's good enough. You know, like, you're talking with millimeter wave. I think they're saying they can get up to like gigabit kind of speeds. But again, you're going to have to be in a very specific area. I've heard in some cases you have to like stand perfectly in one spot and you can't move. So with a mobile phone, like, why do you need that? There's no value in that whatsoever. But, you know, it's rolling out now. We're going to have to hear more. Obviously, it's been out on Android for a lot longer, so we have a lot of evidence that, you know, it's good. It's better than the 4G, but, you know, like, let's not lose our heads over this stuff, Leo. I think we can keep a level head about all of it. And there's the whole battery issue. So that's kind of the last thing that I want to close out on, right? Is we talked a little bit earlier in the show that if you are using 5G, it can have a significant impact on your battery. So if you're concerned about battery drainage and you're not so concerned about getting 5G or getting the 5G speeds, you actually can tweak the settings in your iPhone. So if you go into settings and you tap on cellular, you can tap on the cellular data options, and then you can tap on voice and data. And then you have kind of three different options. Now, the default is 5G auto. So that's the thing where it will switch automatically between 4G and 5G, depending upon your coverage. And it uses that whole smart mode that Apple has integrated in there. So you can leave it on that and it will just toggle back and forth. But you still will be using 5G in certain scenarios. And that, again, can have an impact on your battery life. If you're like, no, absolutely. If 5G is available, I don't want it bouncing back to LTE. I don't want it slowing down even to save on battery life. I just want full speed, full 5G, full on all the time. You can turn 5G on and then it'll be 5G anytime 5G is available. It still will go back to LTE if that's all that's available. But if 5G is available, it's going to try and use that and it's going to use it fully. And again, expect if you turn that on to have an impact on your battery. Just be aware of that when you're enabling it. Of course, you can go completely the other route and you can switch over to LTE. There's an LTE option and that will disable 5G completely and just put it back like your old iPhone 11 and you'll have LTE connectivity all the time. So there's those settings there. And then there also is in the cellular settings, a data mode option that you can tweak. And that has options for allow more data on 5G. So that means if you're doing things like streaming video, those sorts of things, it's going to use all the available data and bandwidth that it can get on the 5G. If you want to kind of save on your bandwidth, you can switch to standard mode or even low power mode. In low power mode, I think it turns off some of the background stuff that goes on in your phone to kind of conserve and preserve your data plan. So those are some settings you can tweak that might help if you're noticing when you move to 5G, right? Because if you're using more bandwidth and you're getting higher video and stuff like that, and you have a bandwidth cap on your plan, that could potentially be an impact. So this might be a setting that you might have to play around with. So that's how you can tweak some of the cellular 5G settings in your iPhone. That's kind of some of my thoughts on 5G. I would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on 5G, on the iPhone 12, on, you know, we talked about this last time. Maybe you're not upgrading. Maybe you're not interested in this stuff. I would love to even hear about that. You know, why would you not be upgrading? What is, you know, what are you excited about? What are you not excited about in the world of Apple and Mac stuff? So shoot me your emails, send me your audio comments. It's always welcome. But with that, that is going to do it for the show for this week. To close things out, I'd like to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for Mac and iOS. You can get more information and details on all their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM9. You can leave a voicemail there. You can also send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or find me on Instagram, just MacCast on Instagram. But with that, that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.